This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is BFM 89.9. I'm Khoo Soo Chong and I'm with Wong Xiaoning, bringing you all the way through to 10 o'clock in the morning. And right now, 7.06, we are talking about markets. About 15 minutes' time, we're talking to Koh Yew Ling, who's an independent palm oil political economist at Sergi Enam Advisors, who will be discussing palm oil. So last night in America, the stock market slumped. Investors are cautious, right? Xiaoning, how did the markets do?
Not so well, because there's been clearly a resurgence in virus cases in multiple states, which puts into question the economic recovery. So unsurprisingly, the Dow closed down 3%, S&P 500 closed down 2.6%, while the Nasdaq closed down 2.2%. Meanwhile, in Asia, yesterday, only Shanghai was up, which was up 0.3%, while the Nikkei 225 closed down marginally by 0.07%. Hang Seng was down 0.5%, Singapore down 0.2%, and KLCI was down 0.3%.
So for more clarity into whys and wherefores of markets, we've gotten on the line with us Tony Nash, who's the CEO of Complete Intelligence. Now, Tony, thanks for talking to us. Trump's getting tough on China rhetoric highlights, obviously American concerns about being too reliant on China. And of course, we can see that being manifested in the list of 20 companies, which is deemed suspicious. In your opinion, can the two economies decouple, or are there interests in supply chains too heavily aligned?
Well, I don't think it's possible to completely decouple from China. I think the administrations are really being hard on each other. And I think the kind of the hard line from the U.S., you know, it's relatively new. It's a couple years old. But I don't think it's possible, regardless of the hard line, for those economies to decouple and for those supply chains to decouple. We had some comments over the weekend out of the U.S. saying that they could decouple if they wanted to, but that's just hard line and kind of unaware of the possibilities. So, you know, what we've been talking about for some time, probably 2.5-3 years, is regionalization of supply chains. And what we believe is happening, you know, what the U.S.-China relations is just accelerated regionalization, meaning manufacturing for North America moving to North America, not all of it, but some of it. Manufacturing for Asia largely being centered in Asia, manufacturing for Europe, some of it moving to Europe. And that's just a progression of the costs in China and some of the risks or relative risks to supply chains highlighted by COVID coming to kind of the realization of manufacturers.
And Tony, you know, U.S. markets corrected sharply last night. So is the market actually now waking up to the reality that COVID-19 is going to be a problem for economic recovery? And, you know, this V-shape that what many investors thought is probably a pipe dream?
Well, I think what markets are realizing is that it's not a straight line. What we've been saying for a couple months is that end of Q2, early Q3, we would see a lot of volatility as people started to understand how the virus would play out. And until we had some certainty around the path, we would have days like today. And we'll have days with an uptick as optimism comes back. But what's happening is markets are calibrating. People are trying to understand not only the path of COVID, but what those actors, meaning the governments, the companies, the individuals, will do to respond. How quickly will markets come back? But what are people going to have to do? What mitigations are they going to have to take? What monetary and fiscal policies will governments take as well? We're not done in that respect. So more of that's to come, but we don't know what's to come there exactly. So, markets have moved a lot on new case counts. I don't believe that it's the case counts itself, because a lot of these are really mild cases. It's just the uncertainty around how long it will last, the magnitude, and the mitigation that people will take around it. So there's more of this volatility to come.
Tony, you might have seen the IMF's growth forecast, which was just announced a few hours ago. They've now said that global growth will shrink 4.9% in 2020. That's nearly 2% worse than what they originally thought. And I think the US also marked by an expectation of a negative 8% down from negative 6.1%. Do you think this might cause the policymakers to have an even more vigorous policy response and liquidity into the system?
It might. I think the U.S. has shown that it's not really afraid to be pretty aggressive. I think you may see more aggressive policy responses in other places. Obviously, China's been very active on the monetary policy side. Sorry, Japan has been very active on the monetary policy side. But we may see more actual spending and more direct support of individuals and companies to make it through this. So I do think that obviously IMF forecasts concern people and get policymakers' attention. I do think that they're probably a little bit overblown to the downside, though. So I wouldn't expect 8% declines. I wouldn't expect a global decline as acute as they've stated just today.
And if we look at oil prices, right, it declined last night. And I think this is on the back of U.S. crude inventories increasing. But is this also a function of COVID-19 fears in terms of how that might impact the economies going forward and consumption of oil again?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, you know, the oil prices are, I think there are a number of things. There's storage, of course, as you mentioned. But there's also, you know, how much are people starting to drive again? What do traffic patterns look like? Also, how much are people starting to fly again? And so, you know, we really need to look at like Google mobility data. We need to be looking at flight data. We need to be looking at bookings to really understand where those indicators are headed. So when we compare a $40 barrel of oil or $39 barrel of WTI today compared to where it was a month ago, you know, the folks in oil and gas are really grateful to have that price right now. And it's real progress from where we were a month, 2 months ago. So I think what people are looking at today is the progress and then the expectation. They're not even necessarily looking at the kind of the real market activity today. It's all relative to a couple months ago, and it's all expectations about a couple months from now.
Yeah, Tony, last question on perhaps the data that your algorithms generated, complete intelligence. What kind of signs and indicators does the technology and the AI tell us about the direction of markets going forward?
Yeah, well, this is where we pulled our assertion about volatility. We really expected things to be pretty range traded for some time. So, you know, crude oil is a good example. We were saying back in February, March, the crude oil would end the quarter in the low 40s. This is WTI, and here we are. So, you know, with volatility, we're not necessarily trying to capture the high highs and the low lows. We're just recognizing that the markets are trying to find new prices. So it's interesting when you look at things like the dollar. The dollar is a relative indicator for, say, emerging market uncertainty and troubles as well. We did expect a dollar rise toward the end of Q1, early Q2, as we saw, but we haven't expected the dollar to come back to strength until, say, September. So there are a number of indicators around trade, around currencies. And what we're finding generally with our client base, or global manufacturers generally, are the algorithms. We've found that our algorithmic-based forecasting has an error rate that's about 9% lower on average than consensus forecasts. So when we had all of the volatility of the last 3-4 months, consensus forecasts in many cases were 20 to 30% off. Ours were about 9% better than that. Nobody expected the COVID slowdown. So if we look at that from a few months ago, you know, the bias that's in the normal way of doing things, negotiating procurement, supply chains, revenue, that sort of thing, we take that out. And the dispassionate, I would suggest that there is a lot of passion in the analysis from day to day when you look at the 3% fall in markets today, but you can't extrapolate today until forever. And what we can do with AI is take the emotion out of this, take a rational view at things, and really remove, not all of the error, of course, nobody can remove the error, but remove a lot of the error from the outlooks in specific assets, currencies, commodities, and so on.
All right, Tony, thanks ever so much for your time. And that was Tony Nash, Chief Executive of Complete Intelligence, talking to us from Texas, USA. Interesting that this kind of stuff that he does at his business tries to remove the emotional, the emotive side of the markets and give some kind of predictor over the future. But I think that sometimes you can't discount too much of human emotion because it's all driven by essentially two emotions, right? Greed and or fear.
Yeah. But, you know, basically his nugget is it's going to be a volatile ride. Hang on to your seats, right? Because we really don't know. There's too much uncertainty out there at the moment. So it's the same whether it's for all prices or even for equity markets.
Yeah, and of course, the stimulus program, I mean, I think the CARES Act comes to an end in July. So all those stimulus checks, which, you know, came into the post.
But there might be another round.
There might be another round because there's been another trillion dollars being discussed and might go through Congress, according to Steven Mnuchin. So
watch this space.
Yeah, Main Street is here. Wall Street is there. They're like the North and South Pole, but then the Fed's got your back. So what do? You take it off the
Never
the
bet
table?
Against the Fed.
You can't bet against the Fed. Just one item, Shawnee, that came out from the headlines. SoftBank trying to raise about $15 billion. The thing they're trying to deleverage, right, because they took on so much debt to go and buy things like WeWork. They're trying to flog their stake in T-Mobile, which is, of course, the U.S. carrier. And that could raise them about $15 billion and that could cut their debt.
Well, guess what? They have another boo-boo in their books, which is Wirecard.
Ah, yes. Ah. Oh, my gosh. Yes, right. Yeah.
So hence
that's another
sale.
$2 billion hole. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, 17 minutes past 7. We'll come back after this. We'll call you Ling. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.